Okay, so we got everyone, so we'll go ahead and get started. Hope everybody had a good weekend. Nice and relaxed and ready to continue on learning about resonance in power converters. If there are any questions, please let me know. Type them in the chat or unmute yourself now. Otherwise, we'll dive in. Second for that. I do still have the Slido open every lecture. If anybody would prefer to be able to submit any questions or comments anonymously, that's still an option. But always welcome to unmute and ask a question verbally or type it in the chat if that's easier. Not seeing anything. We'll go ahead and dive back in. So last Friday, we were talking about this active clamp flyback converter. The idea behind the active clamp was to replace what had been a clamping diode with an active device, a MOSFET or other transistor. And then together with the CS capacitance, either in configuration one or configuration two, we only need one of these two in any implementation. We can create this clamping circuit that can clamp the maximum voltage across our main FET, preventing this very high overvoltage due to the leakage inductance of the transformer dumping into the CDS capacitance of our main FET that we saw in the previous implementations of the flyback. We can also leverage this circuit to gain zero voltage switching of our main FET Q. The only complication is figuring out timing and making sure everything switches at the correct time in order to achieve all these benefits. So to be very careful about when we turn on and off QS, because we need to maintain zero average current in order to maintain some clamping voltage on CS. Now that clamping voltage is regulated only by the on time of QS, not by any sort of resistor balancing or Zener diode. Went through and looked at what that operation would look like, both in the time domain and on the state plane. Had some errors here in my notation where things I wrote as I's but should have been J's, but hopefully the intention is clear there. It should all be J's over on the normalized state plane. Saw that we've got these six subintervals per switching period, two of which are resonant, intervals three and five. We have these arcs of circles on the state plane and resonant type behavior between VDS and IL. Everything else is a linear subinterval. And if all the conditions are right, we're able to obtain zero voltage switching of the main MOSFET Q. Okay. Can also get zero voltage switching of QS. We looked through the subintervals, then looked at the ZVS conditions, and this is where we left off last time. Okay. Two different zero voltage switching conditions, one for the turn on of QS, which, like I said, is not all that important. It's generally going to be satisfied. And then the more important one here is the zero voltage switching condition for our main FET, the flyback active FET. Says that we need to have enough negative current J4 in order to zero voltage switch and span this voltage range. So with that, the only thing left to do is go through and solve the operation of this active clamp flyback. So we have everything we need. We have waveforms both in the time domain and on the state plane. So we'll again go through and solve this. Procedure is going to look just like it did on the sync buck. We'll go through each subinterval individually and derive an equation out of it. Then after that, we'll go through and do the averaging step where we look at all of the filter elements, average, and get some average equations to complete our equation set. Okay. So let's go through and do that. So starting with subinterval one. Subinterval one was this interval on the state plane where we just sat at this point. We had IM current going through our magnetizing inductance and down through the FET. FET was on, we had zero voltage across it. So we just sit at this point, zero comma JM on the state plane. Waveforms are constant in the time domain. So at the moment, we don't really have anything to say about that interval. So we're going to get nothing out of subinterval one at the moment. Individually looking at it, we just have constant values for both of our resonant voltage and resonant current. So we have nothing to say about it. The only place in interval one will come in is eventually when we write that equation for the sum of the times of each subinterval have to add up to the total period length. We'll have to include subinterval one, but since the waveforms are assumed constant in this subinterval, we get nothing out of it. So we move on. Subinterval two, where we actually have some changing waveform. Subinterval two was this interval where the magnetizing current flowed into CDS and gradually ramped up the voltage VDS from zero to this input voltage plus reflected output voltage. Okay. So from this, we'll get one of these equations that looks like slope times time is equal to delta V. It'll look like IM over CDS times T1 is equal to VG plus V over N. So we'll have that here, IM over CDS times, I think I may have said T1, but I meant T2, VG plus V over N. Okay. And then we'll again normalize this by dividing both sides by I base. A little bit more room. Which will give us, on the left, I'll take the I base and IM and call that JM. And then I'll be left with 1 over CDS times T2. On the right, I'll take my VG plus V over N, divide that by I base. I base is V base over R0. V base times R0. And then what I'm going to do is take this R0, divide it over onto the left side, this thing, V base, you can recall from previous slides, V base was VG plus V over N, our selection for analysis of this converter. So this over here on the right is going to be equal to 1. On the left, I'll have my 1 over R0 times 1 over CDS. 1 over R0 times 1 over CDS is equal to R0 is root L over C. So this looks like root CDS over LL times 1 over CDS. It's equal to, we push the CDS under the radical, we'll get CDS squared in the denominator, this 1 over root LC, which is omega naught. So this whole thing becomes omega naught, and omega naught times T2 is our normalized time, is just theta 2. So our equation finally is JM theta 2 is equal to 1. And since subinterval 2 is a linear subinterval, we'll just get one equation emitted from it. Go on to subinterval 3. This is a resonant subinterval, so we expect to get two equations out of it from relating the radii and from solving the angle. So let's go look at subinterval 3. So we'll have an equation, R3 squared is equal to R3 squared, both before and both at the beginning and end of the subinterval. The beginning, R3 is JM. At the end, our triangle has J3 and MS minus 1 as its two sides. So we'll have R3 squared is equal to JM squared at the beginning of the subinterval. R3 squared is equal to J3 squared plus MS minus 1 squared at the end of the subinterval. Taking those two together, we get JM squared is equal to J3 squared plus MS minus 1 squared. For our angle, it's gamma, we can write this in a number of ways. Me, the easiest way might be it's just the arctangent of MS minus 1 over J3. Let's say gamma is equal to arctangent ms minus 1 over j3. Whoops. I was wondering why my ink color had changed. This is the wrong slide. Excuse me. Here. Sorry about that. Okay. Those intervals 1 through 3. On the next slide, we'll do the remaining intervals, intervals 4 through 6. Interval 4, we're back to a linear subinterval. So in subinterval 4, what happens? We have gone up and clamped our voltage at Vs. We have this current flowing through our Cs capacitance. Voltage clamped across the leakage inductance of Vg plus Vn, V over N minus Vs, and we ramp the current down from I3 to minus I4. So we're going to get a single equation again that says this slope times T4 is equal to I3 plus I4, negative direction. So here that slope was Vg plus V over N minus Vs over LL is equal to I3 plus I4. You need to be a little bit careful about polarities here. So this slope gave us some negative change in the current going through the IL, current going through the leakage inductance. So we either need to say that gives us a negative delta I, or perhaps easier to say the negative of this slope. It gives us a positive change. This Vg plus V over N is less than Vs, so this is going to fall out to be a negative slope as we drew in the waveforms. So the total delta I is the negative of this distance. It goes from minus I3 plus minus I4. Okay. Matching that up with the negative sign on either side, then we can again normalize. It's going to go kind of in the same manner as previously. If we divide by I base on the right, we get J3 plus J4. On the left, when we divide by I base, we'll take the V base to normalize the voltage, and the R naught, we'll go with LL to give us an omega naught, but we need the time in here. The slope times T4 is equal to delta I. So when we bring that R naught over, that'll normalize our time along with the 1 over LL. So dividing that out, Vg plus V over N is our V base. So when we normalize that, we'll get 1 minus Ms. Negative sign will persist, and we'll have theta 4 for a normalized time. Okay, getting close, nearly there. Subinterval 5 is our second resonant subinterval. Here we ring around from minus I4 to minus I5, at which point we turn on the main FET with zero voltage switching, assuming our ZVS condition is satisfied. We're going to get two equations again relating R5. At the beginning we'll have MS minus 1 squared plus I4 squared. At the end we'll have 1 plus J5 squared. Have MS minus 1 squared plus J4 squared is equal to 1 plus J5 squared. For relating our radii. And then we're going to write an equation for epsilon. Since epsilon is this interior angle, I'm going to again write it as just pi minus the arctangent of this angle over here and this angle over here. Pi minus arctangent of J5 over 1 minus arctangent of J4 over MS minus 1. This one. From the radii and one on the angle. Final subinterval 6, we ramp up the current, applying a constant voltage Vg plus V over N across the leakage inductance. We go from I5 all the way up to Im. So our equation will be Vg plus V over N over LL times T6 is equal to I5 plus Im. Normalizing that plays out in the same way. J5 plus Jm equal to theta 6 times normalized Vg plus V over N, which is 1, since that's equal to V base. Okay. So now we've gone through and related all of our subintervals with all 6 in mind. Come back up and say, okay, the only place that subinterval 1 plays in is knowing that TS is equal to, let's just say, sum I is equal to 1 to 6 of T sub I. And as we normalize that, we get out of it that sum, we multiply all of our times by omega naught, becomes theta 1 plus theta 2 plus theta 3 is gamma, since it's a resonant interval, plus theta 4 is our other resonant interval, plus theta 6 is equal to TS times omega naught, which is omega naught times FS, which is 2 pi over F. Our complete interval equation will always have one like this, just relating the times of the individual subintervals to the overall period. The final step now is going to be putting all of these things together. In the synchronous buck converter, we got away with just averaging the output current. Like I mentioned before, that averaging of the output current, what it really was cap charge balance on the output capacitor. So we took the one filter element and applied averaging to the current going through that capacitor. In this flyback converter, we now have more than one filter element. So we have LM, CS, and C at the output, and all three of these are large filter elements that we've made the assumption small ripple applies to them. So we're going to get a additional equation from each of these by averaging the either cap charge or volt second balance on the inductors, cap charge on the capacitors. Okay. So we can go through and write an equation for, okay, the average current going through CS has to be 0. What does that tell us? The average voltage on LM has to be 0. What does that tell us? The average current in the output capacitor has to be 0. That one's going to play out just like the synchronous buck. It's going to tell us that the average current through the diode is the average output current, give us an equation for what the average output current is. Let's see first what we get from the other two, and then we'll average the output current last. So for averaging, okay, get one additional equation from applying averaging to every filter element. So in general, in a topology, whatever number of inductors and capacitors we've said small ripple applies to, it's just a large filter element. We'll get one extra equation from them. Here we've done three of those. So we can start with CS, apply cap charge balance, saying the average current I sub CS has to be equal to zero. This was fundamentally necessary to get this thing to work. Said the average current going up here through CS has to be zero so that it can sit at a constant voltage and be our source equivalently that we're clamping to. So what does that mean? It means the average of this waveform IS that we've already drawn has to be equal to zero. There's really only non-zero value in this subinterval four, and it's got a constant slope throughout. That tells us these two charges are equal, which really just is going to tell us I3 has to be equal to I4. So that I3 and negative I4 are equal and of opposite polarity, so that the average over this interval is zero. So that cap charge balance, what it tells us is I3 is equal to I4, J3 is equal to J4. Normalize. Okay, next we'll do LM. LM, we're going to apply volt second balance, meaning that the average VM over one switching period has to be equal to zero. Average voltage on the magnetizing inductance, that would be this voltage here. We haven't sketched that out explicitly, so we'll have to go and look at what it is based on our waveforms. Okay. So during any time when D1 is on, the output diode is on, we know we have a clamped minus V over N across that magnetizing inductance. Right? When this diode turns on, we've got V on the secondary winding, which reflects through as V over N in a negative polarity on this magnetizing inductance. So that'll be intervals 3 through 6. Interval 1, we have the FET on with zero voltage across it, which is just going to put the input voltage on the magnetizing inductance. The FET is on. There'd be a little bit of voltage on LL, but based on our assumption that LM is much greater than LL, LM is going to take more or less 100% of the input voltage. So minus V over N everywhere, interval 3 and on. Subinterval 1 will have VG across it, and then subinterval 2 will ramp between those. See the voltage ramping up on the FET means the voltage is ramping down across the magnetizing inductance. Right. So average value, the voltage on the magnetizing inductance versus time, subintervals here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So like in subinterval 1, we're up at VG. Subinterval 2, we ramp down to some value minus V over N. And then we stay there for the remainder of the period. End of this, as the diode turns off, we jump back up to subinterval 1. So there's our waveform. Now all we have to do is average that. So we can write this out mathematically. Average VM over TS is 1 over TS times the integral over a period, VM of TDT is equal to 1 over TS, and then I'll just go interval by interval and take this integral in each subinterval. So in this first subinterval, we'll have VG times T1. for the area under this constant valued portion of the curve. Second subinterval, we'll have T2 times the average value as we ramp down linearly from VG to minus V over N, which would be VG minus V over N over 2. And then we'll stick at minus V over N for T3, T4, T5, and T6. So let's do a little bit of arranging here. Based on volt second balance, that average is equal to 0. Average voltage on our inductor over one period in steady state has to be 0. Otherwise, we're not in steady state. So with that all set equal to 0, I'm going to collect some terms here. I can first just multiply both sides by TS and cancel this out. And then for all of my terms that are summed together, let's move everything with V over N over to the left. So we'll have VG times T1 plus T2 over 2 is equal to V over N when we subtract everything over times T2 over 2 plus T3 plus T4 plus T5 plus T6. And then what I'm going to do, as I so often like doing, is solve for V over VG, which is, in general, for this class, 41, we call that M, the conversion ratio of the converter. M is going to look like N times T1 plus T2 over 2 over T2 over 2 plus T3 plus T4 plus T5 plus T6. Tell us, okay, the conversion ratio, roughly we've got the transformer turns ratio in there, then it's this T1 plus half of T2 divided by the rest of the period. What does that look like? Well, T1 is when the MOSFET was on. T2 was this ramping interval, kind of MOSFET's turning off in the process of having the voltage raise across it. Then T3 through T6 is when the diode is on. So this is roughly equal to, except for this T2, half of it being in the numerator, half of it being in the denominator. Otherwise, it's just equal to the time the MOSFET is on divided by the time the diode is on. We divided that all by TS. Let's say this is approximately N times D over D prime, which would be the ideal conversion ratio for the flyback if we neglected all of this resonant stuff. Difference here is that these time intervals may be different than they were in the ideal flyback, length of T1 and T2, so it may not be the same D, but still saying roughly the conversion ratio relates to the ratio of how long you have on the MOSFET and how long you have the diode on. I'm out of room here, so we'll just leave this unnormalized on this slide. If I normalize this, I don't need to do anything over here on the right. Or over here on the left, it's just M. On the right, I'd multiply the top and bottom by omega naught, and all of my T's would become angles. Leave that as an exercise for the reader. All right, now we've got one more element to average, and that is output capacitance C. Apply cap charge balance. And see what equation we get out of that. So average of I sub C over a switching period is equal to zero. Current through this output capacitance, we can write as, and this is I sub C, we're saying its average is zero. That current is ID1 minus Iout. So the average value of ID1 minus Iout is equal to zero. So, rearranging a bit, the average value of I out is equal to the average value of ID1, the average current coming through this diode. We can find that as an integral from 0 to TS, 1 over TS of the diode current. If we want to look at the diode current, what is it? The diode current here all has to come through the transformer. So it is whatever current is flowing through the primary of the transformer in this direction. That current is the reflected version of Im minus IL. We'll get Im minus IL, and then we'll divide by N to get through the transformer. So I've copied, this is the plot just from a couple slides ago of what IL looks like, the current through our leakage inductance. So if we want to get ID1, which is IM minus IL, we can just flip this thing and shift it down by IM. So what we'll get is something that looks zero here where IL is equal to IM. And then for IM minus IL, flip it upside down, we'll look like this. Ramp up, have our resonance, ramp back down to zero. Okay. So this value will be Im minus I3. Here will be Im plus I4. Here's Im plus I5. Back to zero, somewhere here, whenever IL crosses zero is when ID will be equal to IM. Okay, so now we need to integrate this waveform over one complete period. We're gonna again do that by looking at each subinterval and what is the integral within that period. So let's push this n over to the right. We'll talk about n times I out. It's equal to 1 over TS, integral from 0 to TS of Im minus IL dt, and that'll be equal to TS times Q1 plus Q2 plus Q3 plus Q4 plus Q5 plus Q6. What is the total area beneath this curve in each of these six subintervals? Okay, easiest ones, one and two, we can just get rid of looking at our plot here, the current's zero, so those integrals are going to go to zero. And then all we need to do is find Q3, Q4, Q5, Q6. Let's write those out. Q3, Q4, Q5, Q6. Okay, Q3 is this resonance subinterval. So we're integrating IM minus IL. I'm going to break those apart. Say the integral of IM, since IM is constant during this time, is going to be IM times T3 minus the integral of IL during this time. Again, we can use a little trick here. Say during this subinterval 3, IL is flowing through the CDS capacitance. So the integral of that current is equal to the change in voltage over that period times the capacitance. Q is equal to CV. So that integral is going to be equal to CDS times VS minus VG plus V over N. CDS times VS minus VG minus V over N. Q4, we've got this linear subinterval. So we can integrate that by just saying the total charge is T4 times the average value of IM plus I4 and IM minus I3. So IM minus I3 plus IM plus I4. Over 2. So that's, let's draw one of these on here. This area here, Q4. And we can simplify a little bit further. So we've got a plus I4 and a minus I3. We've already figured out that I3 is equal to I4. Those two will cancel out with one another. And we'll have 2 IM over IM, or this is just equal to IM times T4. Okay, Q5, our other resonant interval, we'll treat in the same manner as Q3. So it's going to look like IM times T5, now plus whatever we get out of this resonant current IL. Again, in Q5, since it's a resonant interval, all of that flows through the CDS capacitance. Come back and look at the delta V on CDS. So we'll subtract CDS times delta V. Delta V is minus VS. So we'll add CDS times VS. Plus CDS times VS. And last one, Q6, which is the integral under the curve here. It's going to be T6 times IM plus I5 over 2.
Hey, Dr. Costinet.
Yeah.
For Q3, the first voltage value looks a lot like VG.
Should be VS. Poorly written S. Apologize for that. Which comes from, again, just the change in voltage from VS to VG plus V over N. Okay, so now we take these four charges and plug them into this equation. So we're going to sum them all up. We can normalize things at the same time. So what we're going to get is, let's divide everything by I base. n times I out over I base equal to n times, let's call it j out, is equal to 1 over ts. Times all of these things summed up and normalize as we go through. One more thing we do before I add in these CDS variables. I've got minus CDS VS here, plus CDS VS here. As these all get summed up, this will cancel with this term. And our only voltage term will be this minus CDS times minus VG plus V over N. So those two things cancel. So inside here from Q3, I'll have JM times T3 minus CDS times VG minus V over N, the negative sign. The negative signs will cancel out. As I divide by I base, I get, we'll have divide by VG and we'll end up with just a R0 times CDS. So as we divide by the V base, this is equal to 1 since this is V base. We'll have 1 times CDS and then I'll end up with this R0 left over from I base. And that should be positive because the negative sign here and both of these are negative cancel out. Okay, from Q4, I'll get plus JMT4. Q5, since I've already canceled CDS VS, I'll get plus JMT5. And Q6, I'll get plus JM plus J5 over 2 times T6. So let's finish off down here. J out is equal to, I will now multiply and divide everything by omega naught. Out front, this 1 over TS will give me an FS over omega naught, which is our F over 2 pi. And then I can distribute an omega naught through that'll give me omega naught times all my times. So I'll end up with JM times T3 times omega naught gamma T4 beta 4 T5 epsilon theta 6 over 2 from this T6 over 2. Plus J5 times theta 6 over 2. And then I'll have this plus CDS R0 omega naught. Multiply this out. CDS R0 is 1 over omega naught. So when I put all three of these things together, I'm just going to end up with 1. And that's my final equation. Bit of work, but we end up with something relatively simple for my averaged equation for the output current. Any questions on any of that? Or a complete equation set consists of these equations from this slide and the next for our individual subintervals, plus three equations from averaging all of the filter elements. J3 is equal to J4 from averaging CS, something akin to the conversion ratio from averaging the voltage on LM, and an expression for the output current from averaging on the output capacitor. Again, much like the sync buck converter, since these are transcendental equations, in order to go through and solve this, we'll have to use some sort of a numerical approach. I'm not going to be able to directly invert and solve all of these times in order to get a given mode of operation, but given some numerical method, we can solve through all this. Say, for a given mode of operation, what should all the times be to keep ZVS everywhere? get a certain amount of output power. Any questions on that? Not in the time, I don't think we'll get too far into the next topic, but we're going to move into is talking about AC link topologies, which is a class of converter topologies we don't typically cover in the undergraduate coursework, but these will be converters where we have significant AC waveforms, where not only would we miss some of the behaviors if we applied averaging and just small ripple approximation everywhere, but in fact, we get nothing out of it. All of the waveforms are AC in the center of these converters. So these include things like the dual active bridge, series resonant converter, LLC converters, a lot of these that have obtained a lot of interest in recent years as potentially very high efficiency, high conversion ratio isolated converters. Also some non-isolated variants of those where we just remove the transformer. A lot of you have probably seen these related to your research in one capacity or another. But since they're not really covered in 481, we'll do some derivation of what this class of converters, how we arrived at them, what are they meant to do, and then use state plane analysis to look at how we can solve their operation. Only 4 minutes left. I'm not going to dive into that, so we'll pick up their next class. If you have any questions, feel free to ask them now. I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording.